Welcome to selfdiscoverymedia.com, where we discover the communities that are making a difference in the lives of others. Our self-discovery is something we are all making on our life's journey. Here you will find the people that will be your guidance, that will be your inspiration, that will be there for you in support on your journey of life. Do enjoy. Our next show is... Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of An Author's Kiss, right here at selfdiscoverymedia.com. I'm your host, Sarah Troy, and my guest is Tom Liebecker. He's written a beautiful book, which I think is something we definitely need right now, A Gift Most Rare, a heartwarming Yuletide novel. You know, we've been through a lot in this last couple of years, and, you know, it's just turbulence keeps on giving. And every time we think we're out of something, it drags us back in. And we need something that's kind of lift our Christmas spirit. So, you know, the book, The Gift Most Rare, is a heartwarming Yuletide novel, focusing on a young boy, a guardian angel, and a quaint New York village that needs the Christmas spirit. It's Christmas time in the pocket-sized village of Bearcliff Manor, with Yuletide spirits flying high. Life seems close to perfect in this quaint suburban Manhattan, but not everybody feels the holiday cheer. While most go about their joyful holiday pursuits, young Charlie Riverton is restless. Compassionate by nature, he's especially mindful of the lonely and the forlorn. Well, he's the unofficial leader of a close-knit group of sixth grade buddies, and together they grapple with preteen hanks, newfound freedoms, and emerging nerve-wracking interest in girls. So where does it go from there? Well, let's find out from Tom. And, you know, we do need something that just is just going to lift our spirits. We're tired of what I call the Fox News and the CNN effect. Take a pimple and make it into a volcanic eruption. You know, we've got this going on all the time. And we just would love to get into the Christmas spirit, goodwill towards man, good cheer, and just something that warms our hearts. Because our hearts are kind of feeling a little chilly right now, aren't they, John? Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here, Sarah.
So what compelled you to write this book and also write it from this perspective of this young boy?
You know, it's an interesting question because this is my first novel. And although I do write a lot for work every day, being in the advertising and marketing and media business, I am not very experienced writing fiction. And so it was kind of a curious thing when the idea for this story came to me. And in fact, at first I kind of tried to ignore it, and I even kind of scoffed at it, you know, because, you know, I was sort of thinking, great, great story, Tom, but what are you going to do with it? You don't write fiction. And so, but you know, the interesting thing is the idea just hung on, it would not go away. And so after a while you start to take it seriously. And once I decided that, okay, I'll give this a try, I had to do a little bit of research and get educated on how to write fiction, learn about character arcs and story, you know, progressions, and learn about show, don't tell, and all things like that. And so that's what I did. And so what I set out to do was to simply write a God-honoring Christmas tale. As I've explained many times, I have nothing against Santa Claus or flying reindeer or toy making elves. They're wonderful folklore that warms everybody's heart. But I wanted to really stay connected to the real meaning of Christmas. And so I was trying to emphasize themes that are found in the Bible around the Christmas event. And for example, the lesson that's so often emphasized, Old Testament and New, about caring for others and being mindful of people's needs, especially those who might be having a rough time. And so that's what I set out to do. And the main character, Charlie, yeah, he is a middle school age boy. I knew that I wanted to have a young preteen boy that was going to have this super big heart, almost too good to be true, And that would be, he would be the main character of the story.
We can all do with, you know, more heart for sure. And there's an awful lot of people that I have said have stepped into their sensitivity, stepped into an awareness and an empathy and a compassion. And, you know, it can be quite painful because you're feeling everything out there. But when we're willing to step into heart and let the heart lead us, we then, you know, it resonates out like a wonderful good vibration.
Right.
And it really warms people and it opens people up and it can take them from the pain and the anguish into, you know, kind of more lovingness and more caringness and kindness towards one another. But yeah. I feel a lot of people are almost scared to open up their heart. So having a young boy, especially, who is driven by his heart, you know, is a lovely kind of compass to have that others can follow.
You know, I've gotten a lot of feedback about that Charlie character, and it's been very positive. And people have said things like, "Boy, I wish I could walk in his shoes. I want to be more like him." That kind of a thing. And so do I, actually. So yeah, I totally agree with you. Sometimes, you know, we're inspired by the young people around us as much as anything. I've always been involved with, you know, coaching youth sports and with youth group at church. And I gotta say that I think that, you know, it gives you the sense of staying young. They make you feel young when you're around them, and their positive energy and youthful exuberance is definitely something that can be contagious and can, you know, guide you along as well.
My brother is an author and has been for about 50 years. And, he's written all sorts of things, but he turned to youth genre, and he turned to that because there was kind of the limitless of the possibilities of the wonderment of the exploration, and he could take them down adventures that would be harder to take an adult down.
Yeah.
And with it, you go on these adventures, but there's always a philosophy, a lesson, a discovery to be made. And I think when we have a character that we relate to or want to relate to, all the experiences that that character has, we have.
Yeah.
And it can make us feel brave. It can open us up to, like, you know, I'm limiting myself, or why don't I see it that way? Or I wish I could do that, and we can, right? Mm. So I think very often, having a youthful character full of that exuberance, that wonderment, those possibilities, allows us to step out of our own stagnancy and kind of see some wonderment of our own. And that life isn't over just because you've reached a certain age. The adventure continues on.
Right. Yeah. And you know, I think another lesson that I've learned from, you know, the young people that I've been around in the capacities I mentioned is, it's a lot less complicated in terms of their general perspectives. You know, my wife and I are going to be going out to dinner in a little while, and I'm sure at the dinner table there's going to be some complex conversations with friends, and probably a dozen different perspectives coming in to, you know, add to your thoughts and whatever comments you might make. With the younger set, it's sort of more like from the heart, and it's just straight out and unfiltered and refreshing.
And, you know, sometimes could be brutally honest, right?
Yeah.
You know, they're not afraid of calling each other out.
Right.
And, you know, perhaps a little decorum can be, you know, inserted there. But I think it's that they see things the way they are, and they're very much in the moment.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're inclined to kind of think past, present, and future at once.
Right.
And
right.
They're very much in their present, and how they feel in this present, you know, the righteousness of their fortune that moment. And being in the moment is something we're meant to be, because we only have the gift of the present.
Mm-hmm.
And looking at life through that youthful perspective, and initially sometimes it has a negative thing because they get caught in a negative moment and then they don't know how to move forward from that, as we all do. But most of the time you're going to see them in that moment, and I think the clarity and the solutions for the next moment comes in that moment. And they're wondrous when it comes to ideas and creativity, aren't they?
Well, you know, it's funny what you were just saying before about, you know, the way they interact with each other. One of the things that I've gotten a lot of feedback on from the book is the banter between Charlie and his group of buddies. They're inseparable. They go everywhere together. Mm-hmm. They're constantly, you know, playing sports, going to and from school, trying to grapple with this newfound interest in girls and have actual intelligent conversations with them. And yet, you know, they don't hold back on each other, like you mm-hmm. were saying. You know, one of them just dropped a touchdown pass, and oh my gosh, how could my, you know, my sister could have caught that.
Yeah, yes.
Whatever, you know, and so it is fun. They are unfiltered, and you know, they're just straight out refreshing and real.
Yeah. And the thing is that, you know, we're inclined to look at the kids of society today, and they're perpetually on their phones and they're texting and they're not communicating with one another. And, you know, and many of them through social media and just media in general, you would think that they're very shallow and live a very shallow life. Right. But if you choose to sit down with them and get them into a conversation, if you can get them out of the phones, get them into a conversation, there is a hell of a lot of depth there, isn't there? And there's a lot to be learned from them, from their perspective, because we're kind of pretty well stuck in ours.
Yeah. You know, just as a funny aside, I get a laugh out of this. In my spare time, although I'm still employed in the advertising and media world in New York City, you know, I had always wanted to maybe someday be a school teacher. And so at night, a while ago, I went and got a master's in teaching. And when it came time to decide, well, what level of teaching will you be focusing on, elementary? Do you want to be certified in middle school or high school? And I thought, well, I better go with middle school, because by the time they get to high school, they're smarter than me. They have more, they know more about things than I do. And so I could not see myself being in the role of teacher with a classroom full of, you know, teenagers that are actually smarter than I am. So,
But the middle school is also what I call the exorcist moment, where also in their exploration of things, or suddenly the head starts spinning around, you know, and you can take people that have been so goody two shoes suddenly become the rebel. And it's a very difficult age, you know, for middle schoolers, because there is more emotional, brain and physical growth going on in that time period. You know, like when they're from one to two, the amount of growth is just exponential, and they're going through that same kind of growth again then, and it can be overwhelming for them. And so you see a great deal of playing up at that time as well. So it's actually a great opportunity to harness where they're at and give them a direction in order to use that, and not get kind of caught up in the turbulence of it.
Yes, I totally agree. And you know, one of the reasons why I set the main character and his group of friends in their middle school years was everything we've been talking about, but also everything that you just said. This was the time of life when you begin to get your first taste of freedom, and you can go places without your mom and dad tagging along, and go out at night a little bit. You start playing competitive team sports against other schools, and then of course there's that thing with suddenly realizing that girls are there, and so all those things I thought would give a lot of really fun subject matter to work with, and I definitely found that to be true. It was very enjoyable putting these words down on paper.
The thing is, when you watch a lot of kind of youth TV shows, you don't see wholesome too much. Oh, that's too icky, too hallmarky, right? You know, it's the rebel without a cause, and you're only cool if you're a rebel. And it's like to let our kids know that actually it's cooler to be kinder, to come from the heart, than it is to go the other way.
Right. Agreed. And I unapologetically, you know, would go with that hallmarkish perspective. And I'm very gratified there's a few people out there recently that have told me, oh, you know, I read the book and I gave it to my granddaughter to read. There's a person in the neighborhood who has a son that's in that middle school age. And he said that he read the book and gave it to his son, and his son is really enjoying it. Mm-hmm. So I will always gravitate toward that more, what would be the right word, a more of a wholesome kind of a preference.
It's letting kids know that wholesome is also cool.
Yeah.
Because the media and the movies and the everything else has shown a different perspective.
Yeah.
Right? You know, just take the drugs, or just, you know, drink the alcohol. You're just a sissy, or this or that. And it's okay. There is strength and power to say, no, thank you. Not my bag. And the more we can empower kids to say, no, thank you, I don't want to go down that road, and to step into their power, right? Yeah. Instead of feeling, oh God, I'm not going to be cool, I'm not going to be liked if I don't do that. Right. So the more stories we see in kids in that power, love, compassion, kindness, and inner strength, the more it actually shows other kids you don't have to, you know, adhere to all that other pressure.
Agreed. Yeah. And so throughout this whole novel, Charlie Riverton, the main character, really kind of just, you know, walks that line and never is seen losing his temper, never is seen sneaking beer, never is seen, you know, talking back to teachers, whatever it might be. I completely agree with you.
We can be wholesome and cool and everything else. And it's the thing is, I've got three kids in their 30s now, and I have an 8-month-old grandson. And the growth of my grandson at the moment is that, you know, you turn around and he's doing something different, you know, and it's just so massive. And I've always loved when I had my kids, is I was the house that the kids came to. You know, if they're having difficulty at home, they came to stay with us. If they needed conversation, they came to us. Because, you know, I could call you an idiot for doing that, but that meant I didn't love you, I didn't care, right? And it's like, you know, let's have the conversation. You know, why did you feel compelled? Or why is this so, fearful for you? And it's most of the time, they don't know how to talk to adults because they're fearful of the repercussions, or they're fearful of the condemnation, you know, I can't think of the word right now, but, you know, just the lecture that they may get, rather than kind of some solutions being presented to them and inviting them to talk about, you know, what actions they can take, where their power really is.
Yeah. You know, when I was younger in that age group, I am so fortunate. I still to this day am grateful. There were many adult role models that often took the time to just sort of, if I crossed paths with them, to say, hey, come on, let's catch up. How's it going? How's school? How's sports? All that sort of a thing. And so actually a few of them are in the book. They're characters in the book, like Coach Cadman, for example, who to this day is, you know, the greatest role model I've ever had outside of my own father. I drew from that. I was very fortunate to have numerous adult role models that showed interest and showed that they really cared about how we were doing. When they stopped to say, hey, how you doing? They really meant
they were really invested.
And had plenty of suggestions if that's what the conversation called for. And so I was really happy to include some of them in the book as actual characters. Mm-hmm.
It's when the adult sees you, the child, not just as another kid, not just as another brat, but, you know, really sees you and sees and is interested in who you are. Because let's face it, we're all in still self-discovery of who we are. Mm-hmm. Right. In the whole process of writing this book, it was a self-discovery. Can I do it? You know, and I've done it. What's next? You know, and we're always writing another chapter in our book of life. But when we pay attention to our youth and be interested in their chapter right now, how they feel. What we're doing is seeding those possibilities for that next chapter. And they don't want to be dictated to, they want to be heard. And right. And that your response is actually to their problem.
Right. Yeah, agreed. One reason why I've made it a point throughout my adult years since college to be involved with youth activities around town and at church, because there's really kind of nothing better than when you do have a meaningful conversation with a young person, and you can you know, at the end of that conversation, pat them on the back, remind them that they are someone special. There's something special, and good luck. And then follow up with them. That's when I think it really counts. Is the 2 weeks later when you say, "Hey, how did that go? You know, what was the outcome? Did it work?" And you know, really let them know that way that you were listening and that you do care.
And you become a safe zone for them to come back to, right?
Yeah.
So would you say that Charlie is a reflection of you?
Oh, goodness. So I am highly thankful that anyone might think that I could be as good as Charlie. There have been many people have said, "Hey, is this autobiographical?"
And, so other people see it.
Well, my answer is, it is not autobiographical in that I consciously sought to attempt to model the main character after myself. I would never do that.
Mm-hmm. But it's who you know, so that's who you wrote about, right?
Well, what I did was, I fondly recall my middle school years. I know said no one else ever, but I loved middle school. It was 3 great years. And so what I did was it is autobiographical in that I poured my own perspectives from those days. Mm-hmm. I vividly recall the things I was thinking, feeling, hoping for, wanting, needing, whatever it might be. And I poured those perspectives into Charlie's head and heart and the heads and hearts of his buddies. And I also subjected them to a lot of the silly, goofy, mischievous things me and my friends did when we were in that age group. And that was kind of really fun because it created actual chapters where we went to this one place one time and we got into mischief over there. We would do these different things, and the episodes that would come out of those memories were a lot of fun, and they actually became chapters. So it is autobiographical in that Charlie and his group of buddies did experience a lot of the same things me and my friends did in the same episodes. It's not autobiographical, though, in that I attempted to convey that Charlie Riverton is the 6th grade version of Tom Leibacher. In my best moments, he's 100,000 times better than I've ever been.
Oh, so maybe he's a reflection of what you would have wanted to be, but with the foundation of who you are.
I'll take that. Yeah, maybe he is the aspirational version of myself. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We need a lot more kindness in the world. And I think we look to kindness, you know, from our religious sector or, you know, from our families. But given the opportunity to be kind, to be caring and to be solutional, our youth have it. I mean, look at how many of our youth today have stood up for something that counts and that are leading the way. And, you know, they're 12, they're 13, and they have chosen to stand for something, to care for something. And the articulation and the passion and the conviction, no matter what the attack is towards them, they'll take it because they believe in what they do. And when you've got a youth that believes in what they do and why they're doing it, they're unstoppable, aren't they?
Look at Malala. My goodness. And look at Greta. Thornburg. Oh my gosh, so inspiring. Here in the States, there was a very terrible, unfortunate tragedy a few days ago at a high school in Michigan, where there was yet another shooting. Four students lost their lives, but the response from the student body has been so inspiring. So you're right. I agree with that. Contrasting what we see from our adult leadership, it's even more evident.
Yeah. If you're going to stir up the shite, that's what you're going to get, right? If you put the same amount of energy into compassion, love, and kindness, you're going to get a hell of a lot more.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the investment pays back in, you know, it's sort of, it's that old illustration of dropping a pebble in a pond and the ripples that just keep going out and out and out. Yeah, that is the way it works when you're operating on kindness versus some kind of a, somebody cut you off when you're driving and then you get angry and you yell some mean words to that person. Well, it doesn't really do anybody any good, right?
Certainly doesn't do you any good.
No.
You know, it's actually really bad for your equilibrium, for your balance, for your psyche. You know, I mean, right. You know, I'm always saying this is that our emotions are here as an indication of how we feel at the time. So if we are mad about something, okay, it's all right to get mad. You know, like, spend it and release it. Don't get caught. Don't become emotional about your emotions. And I think, you know, one of the biggest problems is that we're seeing right now is people who are angry and they've chosen to stay in the anger instead of looking at how to resolve that anger with a solution. Right. And it's like if you keep thumping your chest hard, that is how much it's hurting you. Whereas if we actually extended ourselves in love and compassion for one another, for what you're going, why are you angry? I'm so sorry you're angry. Let's find a solution so that you're not angry. Blanket person with love. I think we're going to see a totally different scenario. So we certainly can do with a lot more kindness and love, can't we?
Oh, goodness. You know, I absolutely. My least favorite emotion is if I'm angry. Whether it's big anger or little anger, it's my least favorite emotion. And the opposite end is, what is better when your heart is so full with love and compassion that maybe you even spill some tears of, you know, compassion or joy or whatever it might be. So that's definitely where you want to be, and for sure. Yeah. Mm.
And, you know, having a young person who's decided to step into a heart action, somebody that becomes kind of the leader in their own right, you know, because of that compassion. It I think in a lot of ways we see adults do, and we expect you to do it, right? We expect you to be loving kind. You should know better. And, you know, that is the way to go. But when we see the youth do it, stepping outside of the comfort zone, you know, really going against maybe the grain, to do kindness and to do love and to express cheer or concern for other people, I think it's in many, many ways, it shines brighter, you know?
Yeah, I agree. But yeah, it's for, like we were saying before, it's there's a different element to it. It's very inspiring in with a different kind of a hue. Any act of kindness, I think, will warm anyone's heart. But if it's coming from, you know, a young person, it does seem to have a little extra energy to it.
Yeah, most certainly. I'm always saying that inspiration begets invitation. When we are inspired, we're then invited to step up, to join in, to be a part of. And we don't need people making us feel guilty or judging us. We need those people that inspire us. You know, like, and I've been rather neglectful of this. You know, I've bought that Kool-Aid and I know it's not serving me. This person really, really inspires me. Yeah. So what can I do to be an inspiration to someone else? And again, when you've got somebody that's youthful doing that, I think it has even more of an impact.
Yeah, for sure. You know, another character in the book that has garnered a lot of attention is there's a thinly veiled visiting angel character in the book. And I wanted to really make this angel a standout character. So he's 6'5", big broad shoulders, muscles on top of his muscles, and you know, thick blonde hair, nice thick beard.
You sounded like Aquaman there.
full of, you know, he's full of, you know, je ne sais quoi.
Right.
And the way that this angel dispenses wisdom and inspiration and acts of kindness throughout the story, that has also gotten a lot of attention and a lot of positive feedback. And so the angel character is right there with Charlie, helping Charlie along with his plan to make sure, you know, that there's compassion and caring during the holidays, especially for people who are in need and who might be suffering, and especially making sure that no one will be alone on Christmas.
The God consciousness.
Yeah.
Right? You know, it's that people go to church for it on Sunday and then forget about it on Monday. But, you know, when you tune into your heart, soul all the time, and you're coming from that place of that core, that right. God consciousness is always going to be your guidance. It's always going to lead you to where you need to go and show you what you need to do. It is an internal thing because you are channeling God, right? Yeah. Or whatever your God is, God, universe, right. Spirit. Right. But it is that consciousness of that beautiful divine warmth of you're not alone. And I say, as human beings, we have an awful lot of knowledge, maybe too much knowledge. Because it's data, you know, and until we have the wisdom of how to use that knowledge, that's all it is data. And when we step in from the soul, the heart, and the spirit to know what we need to know when we need to know it, that's when we're in our divine knowingness.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, and I agree with what you were saying before. You know, on the one hand, I've always said that Sunday morning church service is the best hour of the week for me. But you know, there's other things happening throughout the week that I make sure I participate in or listen to or read that will keep that inspiration and that connection, you know, going
strong. Yeah, keep the channel open, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And do you find that, you know, with youth and especially your Charlie character, is that there is no switching the channel off because it's Saturday night and they're going out? You know, it is a channel that when it's open and it just keeps growing bigger.
Yeah, I think in this story, you know, Charlie really does a very good job of understanding who he is and what's in his heart. And so, for example, there's one chapter where he and his group of friends and the girls that they're starting to spend time with, they take a day, they take a train ride into New York City during Christmas time, and they go and they see the animated windows at Saks Fifth Avenue, and they go to see the tree at Rockefeller's, and they take a walk through Central Park, and they do all these different things. They have an encounter with a homeless person, and Charlie gives him his lunch money instead of, you know, keeping it for himself, that kind of a thing. So yeah, I think you're right. You know, throughout the story, Charlie definitely, you know, keeps his moral compass intact and in different situations.
And grows even more. I've actually got on the same week with you as Reverend Rick Cole, who runs a Christian church in Sacramento. And he decided to go and live amongst the homeless for 2 weeks to raise money for, you know, their buses that would take them somewhere to sleep for the night safely and get food, and then they go back out again. And he said that he went with a preconceived idea and was blown away afterwards, you know, by the community, by the stories, by the compassion, by, you know, the looking after each other. And I think that is the more you step outside of your own comfort zone and listen to the stories, the more that you are invested in the lives of everyone, everyone, because here you've set it around a village. This is an analogy I use a great deal. That village is only as strong as everybody's participation. You know, when the something happens to one, it happens to all, good or bad. And it's that coming together is that strength, that supporting one another is that strength, that unison. And, you know, it sounds like Charlie wants to bring that unison to the village in a harmonious way.
Yeah. And as the story goes, people rally around his inspiration. They get on board.
They got invited.
exactly right. And they follow his lead, and the whole village, it catches on, it's a Christmas like no one's had before as a result. And so I guess
a reminder of what Christmas is.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't, again, it's a religious holiday, but when it comes down to it now and the meaning of it, it is about a rebirth, a rebirth of love, of compassion. And I think it's a reminder for people that no matter what faith you're in or who you are or what your economic or any other situation is that we look for that hope of that rebirth of love, of compassion, of caring for one another and understanding that we are a united human race and that we're only as strong as we are when we are together.
Yeah. Oh boy, that was really great. I totally am right there with you. And sure, those themes are emphasized throughout this story and for all the reasons you just mentioned, absolutely.
We get, as I said, in, you know, the news, the volcanic eruption from the pimple and, you know, another shooting. And then there was a woman that crashed through a red light and hit a bunch of girl guides, killing one child, hurting others. And it's, you know, a car driving into a house of a child's bedroom. Fortunately, she was all right. Oh. But, you know, these things, the floods that we've got here in BC right now, literally destroying lives. And it's, there is always going to be something. There is always going to be something. But it's like, where are we in the mix? And how do we step up? And we don't just step up at times of crisis. If we're there all the time on some level, on some level, if people feel they've got somewhere to go, someone who will listen, if they feel that they're not going to be judged, if they feel that they count, we are going to see a human race that is truly living in its beautiful abundance.
Yeah.
But we've got to be a human. We've got to care.
Yeah.
We've got to put aside what vehicle we're in, the color, the skin, the female, the male, you know, who cares, and start looking at the heart and soul of each other and really care, because fundamentally that beautiful divine energy is what unites us all, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's better than being able to look at somebody and say, hey, I'm here for you,
yeah,
and really mean it from your heart?
Yeah.
That's kind of life at its best. And, in the story, there is an incident toward the end of the story where there's this tragic house fire that catches numerous other houses on fire. And then suddenly, a few days before Christmas, there's all these families that are literally without a roof over their head. And where are they going to go? And what on earth is going to happen to them? Well, the whole community rallies around. A person who was a villain character in the book up until that point, who's a very wealthy person, ends up, you know, providing shelter for all these families and putting on a Christmas feast for them. And so he has an epiphany and so that's a theme that definitely is very prevalent throughout this story.
Yeah, as I said, here in BC, we're seeing it because families have literally been displaced. And one woman in her small apartment took on a family of five, you know, to give them shelter. And they can't go back to their home. And when they do, it's saturated and the waters are contaminated.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, the government can only do so much. This is when community steps up, right? And there's an awful lot of wealthy people out there. And I think don't against you being wealthy, but I would like to see you take that money and seed opportunities for other people and, you know, put it for the less fortunate people that have faced a crisis or have become homeless for whatever situation, and give them the dignity of being there for them to help them back up. They don't want a hand out. They want a hand up.
Right. That's exactly right. And helping to open up pathways for their human dignity is I think, is key. That's the key phrase. Yeah.
So is there a book two going to come out?
Thank you for asking. There actually is. It will be out within a month or two from now. I had worked really hard to finish the manuscript so that it would be done in time to have been released for this Christmas season. But there were a couple of mishaps that got in the way. And so we lost about 8 weeks on that.
Life interrupters, right?
Yeah. And but it's a really fun story. It's the same cast of characters, but it's 2 years later. Mm-hmm. And now they're on summer break in between their eighth grade and ninth grade years. So it's got, you know, all the fun anticipation that we all felt leading up to that last day of school and 2.5 months of freedom, you know, to do whatever you want to do with your summer break. But also, you know, Charlie and his group of friends grapple a little bit with the anxiety of sorts that they have in the backs of their minds, because now they're going over to the high school. They're going from being king of the hill to being lowest on the totem pole. And
back to being chopped liver, you're right.
Right. Yeah. And so, but it's a really fun summer romp, if you will. It's, you know, a gift most rare, you know, has a real message to it. And it's a nice read and it's a fun read and it's not heavy, but this is just a summer romp. And what was really kind of nice, which is very, very interesting, if you've ever heard that when you're taking on a writing project like this, that it can sometimes take on a life of its own.
Oh, yes, every author will tell you that. The characters write themselves.
It's so true. When I started off writing the sequel, and all I really wanted to do was to write a fun, episodic summer romp, summer break for this group of main characters. And what ended up coming out of it by the end of the story was this whole anti-bullying message, which I was so thrilled with, because that's a really timely message right now. And so I can't give away the story, but, you know, Charlie and his group of friends sort of battle with some older guys because, you know, the older guys think they can kick them off the basketball courts and ball fields and all that stuff. And so they go at it throughout the story. And in the end, you know, the tables are turned a little bit and the whole anti-bullying message comes out of it. So I'm really happy about that.
Yeah. And God, boy, I mean, as evident with this young man recently, he was bullied and Dad bought him a gun. Who buys you a 15-year-old a gun? And his idea of resolving the bullying is just to shoot people, right? And we want, I mean, there are numerous shows on bullying. And it's quite heartbreaking to hear the stories of what people have gone through. Also, the lack of support that they got from their families and teachers, etc. And it's like, oh, you know, just suck it up. It's just what happens. No, it shouldn't be what happens. And, you know, if we allow that to happen, that bullier then has got freedom to believe that they can do it anywhere else at any time. But for a person to be a bully, they're generally hurting inside. Or they haven't got the message of compassion and love. And so it's an opportunity to kind of go in and find out why. Why are they the way they are? And then there's some that just are. That's it. That's who they are as characters. Yeah. And there we need to draw the line of how much power they have. But I'm glad you're covering that, because it's it is something that is ongoing and shouldn't be ongoing, because there's so much awareness out there. And when people read it and they relate to the characters and they relate to the story. It's so very empowering for their own story to come out. And the more the stories come out, the more we shed light on a situation, the more we can look to resolving the problem.
Yes, agreed. And it was an interesting experience because as I was writing, all I had was sort of a list of bullet points of like sentence fragments that would remind me of something that could be fleshed out into an entire chapter possibly. And I had a general idea for what the story arc could involve, but I wasn't really sure about it. So I just started writing.
Yes. And, you're allowed.
See where it takes me. And it was about in the fourth chapter when suddenly a big light bulb went off in my head. I was just writing.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, a couple of things connected. And I just said, oh, now I know what this is going to be about. And so I was able to really work that theme through from there on out. And so that's kind of a really fun aspect of this. There's actually a third book. That's largely written. I'm just getting ready to work on edits now, and the same thing happened there. It's the same cast of characters. Now they're seniors in high school, and that's really a great thing. But there's that anxiety about the future. You know, they all realize that in 10 months, life as they've known it will never be the same again. It ends up I was writing away, and the theme that came out of that was reconciliation. So I did not know going into that story when I started to write that that would be the prevailing theme, but that's what came out of it. So that's a good one too.
Well, that's actually the gift of a good author, is that you have a character, you kind of the shell of what you want to do, but you allow the content to create itself. Yeah. You know, you kind of get out of your own ego and your own way, and you allow. And that's really, the sound of a good author, is because you've allowed your characters to evolve, the story to unfold, the meaning to be revealed, instead of dictating it's got to be like that. And, that kind of limits the creativity if you're doing it that way. You can have the outline structure, but then you allow the story, the creativity to unfold as it's meant to.
And it's just an amazing experience, the way that happens. It's kind of a magical experience when it's happening.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, it's almost like you're taking dictation instead of creating, because something has been created and unleashed, I guess you could say, that has a life of its own, and now you're following it. And when you get to that point, boy, that is just a delicious, super fun, super meaningful place to be. And that part of that whole process is just fantastic. And I have a, believe it or not, a fourth book in the works. This one is the post-college one, and then they're facing all kinds of other challenges, the same cast of characters, and the theme that's already emerging there is perseverance and trusting God.
The other thing too, which happens so absolutely commonly, is they go through university, they meet the girls, they're having the careers, then they go off into life very often in different directions. Yeah. How do they maintain that friendship when, life interrupters comes in, and career and wives and children? How do they still maintain that belief in one another that was so utterly strong? And I think for a lot of people, when they get to that stage, it's, they let friendships go, and they don't want to, they just don't know how to hold on to them.
What I've experienced in the last 10-15 years or so, on the one hand, it's true, there's a relatively small number of friends that I grew up with that I still see regularly and close touch with, but we, about 15 years ago, sadly, one of our dear, dear friends and classmates lost his life, and we got together after the funeral service, and we were having dinner, and we said, let's get a reunion going. Let's get a class of 78 reunion going. And we did. And that whole night was this amazing love fest that just went on and on and on. So it's true. So many people relocate. One of my closest friends after college relocated to France, and he's seldom been back since, but he came back to that reunion, and I hadn't seen him or spoken with him in I don't know how many years, but it was just like it was the day before.
Right.
And it's the same thing for so many other people. People came from all parts of the country and even from other countries where they're now living, and it was just fantastic. So those friendships are built to last. It's just, you know, a matter of, you know, I guess flipping a switch and turning them on again.
Well, the channel is always there, and it's just opening it up again. I've got friends like that I may actually only physically see, you know, a couple of times in the year, but it is, you pick up from where you left off, but that channel opens up and you're right back as if it was yesterday.
Yeah.
Right. And you're just sharing more experiences that you've had in the meantime. And it's wonderful to have. I'm a bit of a nomad, so I've traveled around a great deal. So I don't have that basis of that history because I'm, you know, pretty well always on the go somewhere. But for me now, it's family. You know, it's my children and my grandchild, and they're the ones that kind of ground me. But, you know, I think it's very interesting that you've become the author, you know, that you didn't expect to be. I've been trying to write my book for years. And every time I think I've actually got the way I want to do it, somebody says, well, I think you should do it this way. And it opens up a whole nother can of worms. And so, you know, I think it's just going to be a question of, you know, I'm going to do it the audio way and then transcribe it, just push the button and see what comes out, you know. So somewhere along, you've got to get started, right? And then from that will come the clarity.
Yes.
And the structure and everything else. So it's, you know, a lot of people kind of wait until it's perfect before they do it. And it's like, just do it. You can perfect it later.
Yes. Yes. That is exactly it. I mean, what I found is that the editing process after the manuscript was written was as much fun as the writing process. And I probably made about 10 passes over the manuscript before I handed it to the publisher. Mm. The first one, you're checking for flow, and you're editing sentences and paragraphs. The next one, maybe you're making sure you've got just the right words, and maybe the next Passover, you're working on show, don't tell, eliminating adverbs, you know, and then, you know, other, you know, so you're going to work on that manuscript and iron it out and really, you know, fix it up at the end. But the main thing is to just get going. And remember, I started off scoffing at the idea that I could write a novel. And then finally, after quite a while, I just started putting words down on paper, and boy, did it ever flow. Mm-hmm. And early on, I thought to myself, before I convinced myself I could even do this, I thought, gosh, you know, how are you going to write 80 plus thousand words about something? And I read an article, I can't remember who the person was, but she was giving writing advice, and she said, you know, if you can write just one paragraph a day, at the end of a year you'll have a body of work. So that was something that I thought was very logical and very inspiring, because, you know, I do work full time in New York City, but I thought I can find the time to write a paragraph a day, and then that paragraph can get fleshed out to being a whole page. And then at the end of the year, you'll have a body of work. And so that was important to me. And I've retold that many times, you know, because it is a little bit intimidating at first. You can't, you know, get started. You can't get out of the batter's box, but if you'll just start writing, it'll come.
And the thing is, that's the thing. Isn't that with anything in life?
Yeah.
You know, don't think about it. Do. You know, I love, you know, Nike's thing, just do, or Yoda's thing, you know, don't think, do. And it's like, sometimes your mind has already got the data in it.
Yeah.
You know, if the heart is in it, do.
Yeah.
How you're going to do it will be revealed, but just take that first step.
Yeah, you can't be concerned about, is it any good or not, or am I, is my grammar correct or not?
Yeah.
All that'll get fixed in the process.
Yes, it's getting that creativeness down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely. So I know that you're sold on Amazon and iTunes and Barnes and Nobles and Walmart, A Gift Most Rare. That's all they have to put in and they'll find it on all of those networks?
Yes, correct. That's right.
And how did they get hold of you?
Mm-hmm. Well, the best way to do that would be through my author's webpage, which is www.tomleibacher.com.
Will you spell that for the people who are just listening, please?
Yep. T-O-M, first name, Leibacher, L-E-I-H, B as in boy, A-C-H-E-R.com, tomleibacher.com. And there's a video there, there's reviews there, there's mention of the sequel to come. So lots of good stuff. And there is an opportunity to communicate with me directly. And I really enjoy that when that happens, getting a question from somebody that I've never met before and then engaging with them. That's really great.
And Tom Leibacher, author on Facebook?
Yes, that's true too.
So people can connect with you there too.
Yep.
And you know, the thing is I can see this being book six and book seven, you know, right to the rocking chair stage.
Right.
Because basically what you're doing is you're telling people's lives in a way. Mm. Right? You know, as they go through each stage, somebody is going to relate to that, whether it's 100% it's relatable, one of the characters or the situations is relatable. And as they then go for the next phase and the next phase, it almost becomes a compass for people.
Right.
And, you know, for young people, it can almost be then this is the way life could be. You know, those are the potholes. And let's make sure we stay in contact, blah, 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 blah. And for other people who are living it, they can look back on their journey, which very often they're so caught up just in the now, they don't look back to what a fruitful journey they've already had.
Right. That's right. Well said. The novel is episodic, but it does tell the story of these people's lives. And two of the most compelling characters, I think, in A Gift Most Rare start off as villains. And then they have these epiphanies and they become changed people. And it does reveal people's lives. And that was a lot of fun, and it contributed to the story in meaningful ways.
Yeah. And, you know, just you basically, as you started them off with, they don't have to be holier than now to do good work. Mm. A lot of people think, are you going to be holier than now and boring? No.
Oh,
you know, and very often it's the people who have maybe made some bad choices that understand the better choices even more.
Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely true for, you know, those two characters I was referring to. One, his name is Parker Jones. He's a Vietnam vet and really upset and angry at life, understandably, for all that he's been through. The other is an older gentleman that, you know, grew up in very tough circumstances with an alcoholic father, et cetera. And so goes through most of his life, you know, in a no holds barred kind of a way. And then, you know, ends up from an encounter with this young boy, Charlie, and something this young boy, Charlie, says to him just off the cuff, having a complete, you know, turn around and change of perspective.
We're at a crossroads in life. And, you know, I was giving a saying over 4 years ago from the universe. The universe, that's going to shake us up, to wake us up, for us to step up, to change it up, and to grow up vibrationally and grow up as human beings. And I think, you know, many people have stepped up into the step up and the change it up, and they're doing wonderful work. And you're doing that through your books. A lot of people are still in there. I'm shaken and I don't know how to wake up. And we can only help the people that are, you know, that are willing. And you never know when that inspiration is going to hit someone.
Sure.
You know, they could hear it over and over again. And then there's just that one time, it's suddenly the light bulb goes off. Right. Yeah. And it becomes that invitation for them. So all we can do as podcasters and as authors is put out the knowledge, put out the wisdom, set the invitation, and it's up to us to pick it up. And having said that, this is a fantastic book to give the family for Christmas, where everybody in the family can read it, because everybody in the family is going to get something out of it, and then around the dinner table have a wonderful conversation about it.
Yeah, thank you so much for that. There are some people who are in my age group who say, oh my gosh, it was such a fun trip down memory lane going back to the 1970s. But as I mentioned, there's others who have given the book to, you know, their teenager in their house and they're enjoying it. And,
yes.
And so, I've gotten feedback from a wide range of age groups and demographics. So I think it does have pretty broad appeal. And of course, the subject matter, Christmas time.
Yes. And you know, it's not just a book for Christmas, although you've done it around Christmas. Mm-hmm. One can take the carbon copy of that kindness and that action and use it every day of the year.
Yes, agreed. Yes, indeed.
So a gift most rare. Please, folks, put it in your Christmas stocking for the family. Give it to someone that you know. Maybe, you know, there's a teenager that you have no idea what to get for. This is a great book. Somebody that, you know, maybe was in the 70s, or a veteran that you know, or somebody you know that's going through a hard time. You know, this is a book where when you see a reflection of yourself, it helps you, ability to see yourself and go, I need to make a change. Right. I need to see things differently. And sometimes it's only that mirror that's been held up to you in some form or other that you're going to do that. So I love a book that not only is inspirational and invitational, but I love a book that has depth and meaning on so many multiple levels that it has a community effect. So this is a book that should be in the library at schools. And, you know, and it should be something that's encouraged for youth reading, for parent reading. To actually even understand the ability of the youth. So it's an all age group.
I hope so. I think so. Yeah. Thank you so much.
You're going to have to come back with the other books and share the next chapters and the next stories in there. I'd love to share it with our audience. And, you know, I love the fact that you just wrote this one book and now there's at least six of them to come, right? Because it's unraveling, right?
I pinch myself, you know, it started with me scoffing at the idea that I could do this, it getting published and getting, I think there's 65 five-star reviews now on Amazon, to then spawning multiple sequels. And I haven't even mentioned the actual, A Gift Most Rare has been converted into a screenplay, and there is a producer in Hollywood that's attempting to get it made into a movie. So it's
really, I am delighted to hear that, because I was thinking it's a perfect Hallmark movie. It really is. I mean, I can see them picking up on God Winks. But yeah, I'm glad to hear that, because it is, especially the youth genre, that the youth need to see more of. Yeah. Because it's empowering to show them that love and kindness really is the weapon of choice. It has so much more impact than any of your weapons or your hate. Weapons and hate may destroy in the moment, but hope and love is something that seeds possibilities forever to come.
Agreed. Absolutely.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for coming and sharing today. I love the story. I love the whole, how everything has come about. If you're listening to this show down the road, you know, yes, it's a great Christmas present, but again, it's a present that keeps on giving because of the message. So you've got his other book coming out in a few months. Get this one, because it really is something you need to read in a sequence to really understand, you know, the kind of the storyline and the thread. This doesn't have to be just for Christmas, all right? And Christmas can be every day of the year if we're in the right mindset, right?
That would be good, yeah. Thank you, Sarah. It's been so much fun. I really enjoyed being with you, and thank you so much. I will look forward to coming back again.
Just let me know when the next book is ready, and we'll do the next chapter.
Okay, sounds great. Thank you.
So, folks, there's always inspiration and always solutions, and storytelling is one of the very best ways to show how we can all come together through whatever adversity, challenges, or strife into stepping into loving kindness of one another and really actually make things work. So until next time, folks, bye for now. We hope that you enjoyed the show. You will hear many, many shows here on selfdiscoverymedia.com. We have new shows for you out every week. Just find them on our podcast or What's New. If you feel that you have something to share that makes a difference in the lives of others, or you too feel that you could be a host, please contact me at info@selfdiscoverymedia.com and we will be glad to speak with you. Have a wonderful day.